You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
If you've watched any of the Republican debates or seen any of the political ads coming on your television, you would think that Newt Gingrich and Mitt Romney, presidential hopefuls, don't have very much that they agree on. People have said that this may be the nastiest campaign in history. But it turns out there are actually a couple, two or three points of agreement between the two. Language education happens to be one of them.
As a country, to unify ourselves in a future in which there may well be 300 or 400 languages spoken in the United States, I think it is essential to have a central language that we expect people to learn and to be able to communicate with each other in.
I think Speaker Gingrich is right.
The question of how to teach new immigrants to speak English, though, has become an increasingly heated debate in classrooms around the country. California, Arizona, and Massachusetts, some time ago, years ago, all replaced bilingual education with English immersion programs. But is immersion actually better? That's the question that Devin Brown asked. Devin is a reporter for the Fronteras Project, a multimedia collaboration focusing on the southwestern border between the U.S. and Mexico, led by KJZZ in Phoenix and PBS in San Diego. Devin Brown followed one Los Angeles student through 5 years of English immersion classes to find that she's now struggling to communicate in any language.
Andrea was like a lot of first graders in L.A. public schools. She came from a home where multiple languages were spoken, and she told me she could speak three of them.
I speak Spanish, English, and Quechua.
At the time she said this, when she was 6 years old, we both thought it was true. And in some ways, it was true. She spoke Spanish with her siblings at home.
Yo te quiero. Yo te quiero mucho.
She spoke Spanish and Conjobal, which is a Mayan language, with her parents, both of whom are from Guatemala.
Pate means tortillas, and ubal means like those little things, the like frijoles.
And she spoke English in class with me, the fifth first grade teacher she'd had that year.
We were drawing things, and we were drawing planets, all the planets. I think I know all of them.
But eventually it became clear that this was only sort of true, that Andrea could only sort of speak Spanish and only sort of speak English and really knew just a couple of words in Conjobal. This lack of linguistic foundation is surprisingly the situation for a lot of kids in L.A., and the reason why has its roots in all three worlds these kids mainly go between, their home, their neighborhood, and their school.
Hi, my name is Andrea. I have four sisters, me, Virginia, Marcia, and Sonia. I have a brother that's called Giovanni Cano.
Andrea's parents work all the time to support their kids. They're in the garment district during the day, and at night, Andrea's mom makes tortillas to sell to street vendors, and Andrea's dad is off to work as a security guard. They're simply not around enough to really give Andrea a solid foundation in Spanish or Conjobal.
Tamales, champurrado.
The neighborhood where Andrea lives doesn't offer much help in the way of linguistic clarity either. The signage is neither in Spanish nor English, but, like Andrea, somewhere in between. They say things like mucho bargain and regalos para baby shower. And at school, Andrea is almost exclusively around other kids also learning English, and they all mainly mimic the broken English of each other. UCLA professor Patricia Gondera says this stems from linguistic isolation.
The children can grow up their entire lives never really hearing English spoken by a native English speaker and never seeing any of these models or anything.
Teachers, who are often the only fluent English speakers the kids know, spend most of their day teaching reading and writing, and so they're usually speaking the very specific, almost nonsensical English of the district's reading program.
Goo. Ooh, 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 ooh.
What can this is some of the first English Andrea hears.
Could it be a new flute playing a tune? No, it's goo.
Only 11% of California's English learners reached proficiency in English last year. And Gondera says that, like Andrea, many of these kids are also struggling in Spanish.
I mean, anecdotally, we know that kids who are not educated in the language at all and are forced into English, will tell you, I'm sorry I don't I don't remember anymore.
Of course, Andrea knows some Spanish, but it's the Spanish of cooking and clothing factories. She knows some English, too, but it's the English of planets or goo and flutes. Neither world offers much connection to the other, and by the time Andrea is 10 years old, she basically believes she can't speak any language well.
I talk weird. I don't know, because the things that I make up supposedly, I don't know what they're trying to mean.
At this point, when kids lack a foundation in even one language and are basically trapped inside their own heads without words to help them out, teachers say they typically see one of two things happen. The first involves hitting. Teacher Lillian Thompson puts it like this.
And what I see at the end of first grade, they can't talk to their parents. The parents can't control them behavior-wise. The kids begin to punch their parents. I see violence.
Or, alternatively, teachers say they see kids just quietly fade out. Researchers call dropping out the final act of disengagement. Final meaning the disengagement can start very young, when kids can't make sense of what's happening at school and don't have the words in any language to tell you that they're lost. Reporting from Los Angeles, I'm Devin Brown.
Devin Brown reporting for the Fronteras Project, a multimedia collaboration focusing on the southwestern border, led by KJZZ in Phoenix and KPBS in San Diego. Joining us now, Robert Slavin, professor of education at Johns Hopkins University. And Robert, you actually co-authored a new study that tries to determine whether bilingual education or English immersion are the better ways to teach English. What did you find?
We found that it really didn't make much difference in the long run. We had children who came into kindergarten and were assigned at random either to get bilingual education or just to get English immersion. And then the kids who were taught in Spanish initially were transitioned into English in about second grade. By fourth grade, there was no difference. They were performing equally well in English, in reading, and in speaking. So I think that there are other reasons, perhaps, to prefer one program over the other. But in terms of reading performance, it doesn't make any difference.
But Robert, having just come out of the story we just heard about Andrea in Los Angeles as an example of the plight of many Spanish or Mexican-American students in the United States, that doesn't give us much hope. If neither is better than the other, that means neither is as good as the other either. They're equally bad, they're equally good.
I think that's true, and I think that there are many other solutions other than focusing on the language of instruction. There are numerous programs that have been found to be very effective to improve the reading performance of Hispanic or Spanish-dominant children. Whether you're focusing on Spanish or focusing on English. And I think it would be better to try to focus on those proven programs rather than expecting that language of instruction is the only thing that you can vary.
So how do we do that then? What other are there options besides focusing on what teachers use in the classroom?
Well, I think you do have to focus on what teachers do in the classroom. But let me give you an example. There are many, many studies that find that if you have kids work in cooperative groups where they're speaking with each other a great deal to learn mathematics or science or social studies as well as reading, and then they're all responsible for the success of all of their friends, they have to do a lot of talking with each other and teaching each other, and as a result, they're using the academic language of the school much more than they might without cooperative learning. So it helps to solve some of the problems of shyness or kids who are not confident in using the language of the school.
So do you think your study would lead to, say, dumping both bilingual and English immersion as a strategy?
Well, you have to choose between the two. Either you're teaching in English or you're teaching in Spanish. I think that there may be other factors that would cause districts or states to choose one over the other, and either one can be fine. But I think that if you think that you've solved all the problems just because you are teaching in one language or the other, it's not supported by the evidence.
Robert Slavin is professor of education at Johns Hopkins University. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Co-authored a study that finds, as you heard, bilingual education, English immersion actually work pretty much exactly the same well when it comes out to whether kids learn English in their classrooms or not.
Linguistic clarity is kind of a theme this hour for us. Our conversation with the editor of a Dictionary of American English and introduced us to some regional entries like Kitty Corner. That's pretty familiar. Yeah. King's X, a little more obscure. Railroad Daisy. I know what that is, but that's pretty obscure. You've added a few as well. Paul called us, 8778-MY-TAKE, with pig in a poke. That's a ham sandwich in a paper bag, says Paul. Stephanie called in, same number, to say, in St. Louis, instead of redneck, we say Hoosier.
Stephanie.
Talking to all those people waiting for the Super Bowl up there in Indianapolis. Kevin from Michigan posted to our Facebook page to say, in Missouri, how much do you like means how much do you have left to do?
Oh, wow. I've never heard that.
They do speak differently there in Missouri.
Missouri.
Yeah, we want to hear your entries. Call them in at 8778-MY-TAKE or post to our site, thetakeaway.org. I'm John Hockenberry.
Don't dilly-dally with those responses. I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.